It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
0-2. Inside corner to call third strike. 1-2. Inside corner to call third strike. Outside corner, it's a call third
strike. There's been a number of those that have been called today that aren't strikes.
He caps on. It's a call third strike.
Lord. There's been way too many of those today, and I know it's not an easy job umpiring, and there's been a lot of guys with good arms, but you cannot reward the pitcher for making a pitch like that that's down in the zone.
I think there were some big calls in this game that were called incorrectly. Some strike ball strikes that were just missed.
Yes, the Cubs are running down a dream. Hey, how's that for a baseball segue? The last voice you heard was Craig Counsell, manager of the Cubs. Yeah, that's it. That's as plain spoken as you're going to get. That's Craig Counsell. And before that, about not rewarding pitchers with balls that far down in the zone, that was Joe Girardi on Marquee. Speaking of Marquee, our next guest. You can find him, you can read him on watchmarquee.com. Tony Andracki joins me on the guest hotline presented by Circus Sports Illinois. Tony, I thank you for joining me today as the Cubs get ready to play game two. I'm torn. I hate hearing all the crap about umpiring. And here's why. Is it's part of the game, and I do think that it sums up the Cubs season that the Cubs don't know that they're allowed to swing earlier in the count, score earlier in the game, and they're allowed to adjust to that kind of umpiring. Play the game that's right in front of you. And I think that there was a lot of yelling and screaming about the umpiring and the bet. Well, that's the way it is. How are you going to combat that to win the game? I'm very frustrated that they allowed themselves to stay frustrated. Do you think there's any merit to that?
Yes and no. I mean, I guess, you know, yes, in the sense of like, yeah, you know, when the umpire is a big factor in the game, I think there's always something that you could have done differently, right? Like as a team, the Cubs left 10 guys on base yesterday. That's not all umpiring, and I think they know that. They would say that as well. The no aspect is, you know, I think with after the 4 days off, I do think there's a big mental change, and like yet while us on the outside watching and fans watching and stuff, it's like, oh, here we go again type of game yesterday. I don't know that the players and coaches and stuff internalize it that way. I don't think they're like, oh, here we go again, or the frustration mounts or whatever right away. I really do think that there's something to every team, you know, whether it's the Cubs or the White Sox or Diamondbacks or whoever, coming after the All-Star break, 4 days off, feeling refreshed and feeling optimistic and positive. And I don't think a couple bad calls take you out of that. You know, these guys are all big leaguers and get to that point. But yeah, that being said, I do think the calls changed the game. And I think the Cubs' inability to get the big hit was the real decider, not just the umpiring, but, you know, the fact that they scored two runs and had the opportunity to score plenty more.
Tony Andracki of Marquee is my guest. You can watch marquee.com. You can read his reports there. And I don't know if it's good or not. They're playing the Diamondbacks, and look what the Diamondbacks did. They took advantage of, you know, say a Suzuki can't field. The Diamondbacks beat the Cubs in games in series last September. The Cubs thought they should have won. We thought they should have won. They didn't. The Diamondbacks got in, and they got into the World Series. And the Diamondbacks are being held up as an example of just get in and see what happens. And then this year, in a way, not unlike last year's Cubs when they sucked, and then all of a sudden they got really hot. Bellinger got really hot. The Houston Astros trailed by 10 games on June 19th. The 24 games that they now lead the AL West in is the third fewest by a team to erase a division deficit of 10-plus games. So there it is. There's a team doing it this year. There's a team doing it last year. And maybe that's an impetus to make a deal or not. And I don't know. Why don't you tell us what you think would be required for the Cubs to get Astros-like hot, get Diamondbacks-like hot?
I think that's the multi-million dollar question that every single person in the Cubs organization is asking themselves. So, trust me, if I had an answer, I think I would be sharing it and stuff too. So I don't have an answer, but I do think there are different elements. And for me, what it boils down to is I'm not so worried about the trade deadline or so focused on it, because I do think the Cubs have the capabilities to play better than they have played. I think it's the guys on their team that need to go out there and perform like they're capable of. And we always hear the phrase, you know, the back of the baseball card. And there are several guys on the team that are not performing up to what the back of the baseball card is. And, you know, they have a bunch of guys coming back from injury soon. And you mentioned Bellinger, you know, in the next couple of weeks, he might be back from the finger injury. They still kind of need to see how it goes, but a bunch of bullpen arms are coming back soon. And Mike Talkman was just activated. So I think that there's an element of, you know, getting healthy can help, the break can help. But at the end of the day, like the guys that are, you know, have already done it, have proven it, have been reliable contributors over the course of their big league career, need to just go out and do it over the final 60-ish games or whatever there is remaining. And I think that if they do that, if they pitch that well and hit that well and field that well and all that, I think we'll be looking up and the Cubs will be in a playoff spot. If they don't, if it's more of the same, like the first 100 games, then, you know, we'll be talking about the same thing, but the Cubs being 1-5 or 6 or whatever games out of the final playoff spot.
If that's the case, then the first person we should blame is Dansby Swanson. You think?
I don't know. I mean, possibly, sure. Yeah, like offensively, he is well below his career numbers. So, yeah, I think there's certainly like validity to that. He's been really good defensively. He had, you know, maybe a little bit of like throwing issues early in the season, not much, but, you know, he's been phenomenal defensively the last couple of months, really. And the team as a whole, the last few weeks have been really good defensively. And that was something that I would point to, maybe not necessarily just one person, but I thought this team would be a lot cleaner defensively for the first couple months of the season than they were. And then also base running wise. I mean, I don't know if they still lead in Major League Baseball and outs on the base pass and outs at home plate, but they did lead for much of the season. And I think those two areas, you know, you got to clean it up when the offense isn't performing the way they're capable of. And the bullpen has suffered a lot of injuries and suffered inconsistency as well. So to me, I think it's just that aspect. And it's a veteran laden lineup too. You know, a bunch of guys playing the positions that they typically have played. I mean, Morel hasn't played a bunch of third, but he came up as a third baseman. That's the position he's played vast majority of his career in the minor leagues. And, you know, I was underwhelmed, I guess, by the defense and the base running early in the year. And I feel like that has kind of come back to haunt them and part of why they're in the position they're in.
Tony Andracki is my guest from MarqueeSportsNetwork.com. He covers the Cubs. So you mentioned some of the injuries, and especially the bullpen, which, look, I'm sorry, even, you know, unless you have Mariano Rivera, it's a crapshoot every year. So you talked about Merriweather, there's Ben Brown, there's Luke Little. You wrote about it. So share with the class what you wrote about and what hope might be brought to the Cubs bullpen.
Yeah, so Merriweather's getting really close. He just had his fourth rehab outing last night for Triple A Iowa. Looked pretty good, you know, threw like 27 pitches, got 5 outs. He's at the point where counsel said at the latest it would be on the road trip, starts next Friday in Kansas City. But he could be activated earlier than that, you know, if all continues to go well. I don't know if the Cubs will need another rehab outing from him at this point. So, I mean, I wouldn't be stunned if tomorrow or Monday he is activated and rejoins the bullpen. Again, they may be a little bit more cautious given that he missed 3-plus months and didn't face hitters for almost that entire time as well. But I think that'll be huge. Ben Brown's still kind of throwing and not really facing like a ton of hitters. The timeline on him is murky. They don't really know. Luke Little, they're getting a second opinion on his left shoulder, so they don't really know exactly how long he's going to be out. I think anytime you are a pitcher and you only throw 4 pitches and have to come out, you know, like hanging your arm the way he did,
yeah,
certainly a bad sign in the middle of July. So I don't know what that means overall, but yeah, he's not going to be back for a while, I guess we'll say. Then Adbert Alzolay looks like he's, you know, on the verge. I don't know. They haven't released like for sure next steps, but he's been throwing bullpens, I know, in Arizona too. So he's another guy that maybe could be on his way back within the next few weeks here. But I think all those things would be really big for the bullpen, just continuing to get healthy, and some of the other guys that they found, you know, the Tyson Millers and stuff of the world, I think this bullpen actually has been a strength over the past month. It's been one of the better bullpens in baseball. You add some of these guys into it, like, it could be like a legit strength for this team over the final 60 games.
I wonder, it seems to be ever-changing, but the circle of trust, Craig Counsell's circle of trust in the bullpen, who's that handful? Where does he go? He's in trouble. Help, Cecil, help. Help, Cecil, help. I'm coming, Beanie Boy. Who comes for him? Who's the circle of trust?
You know, I think it's a few guys right now. Tyson Miller is one that has certainly emerged. You know, Hector Neris has had his ups and downs, but I think his veteran experience, Counsell really appreciates, the Cubs really appreciate as well. Mark Leiter Jr. coming back after the forearm injury, you know, he's been solid. And then Porter Hodge, the rookie, has definitely been in there. Like I think it was the second game Saturday, whichever game on the doubleheader in St. Louis, he was the one that was out there in the eighth inning, and he did end up, you know, blowing the lead in the game. But he was the one that was in the circle of trust and got the call. So I think those four guys, four righties, are the main guys. But we've also seen Drew Smyly and Hayden Wesneski pitch in some big innings and high leverage moments throughout this season as well. So I think if they're both going good, and Wesneski looked pretty good yesterday, I think that they could potentially be in that circle of trust as well.
He just scares me, Hayden Wesneski. I like the whole story. I like the threat. I like the way it looks. And then, oh my God, I mean, just some of those games, the palm to forehead games, or just the oh no's. And I don't know what it is. Maybe he thinks it's one thing or two things. Maybe the Cubs believe they can solve it. It keeps going out there, but he scares me.
I mean, I think what it is really is the home run, and that's what has victimized him this year, is he's given up too many home runs. And there's a stretch where it was like, I think 6 or 7 out of 11 appearances not too long ago that he had given up a home run in. And that's just tough to do when you're a reliever and you're only pitching one inning or maybe a little bit more than that at times. But yeah, I think that was the big deal. I think the fortunate part was most of those were solo homers. You know, John Lester always says, like, solo homers won't kill you as a starting pitcher. They certainly can as a reliever, yeah. But you know, figuring that out is a big factor. But all that said, I mean, Wesneski still has pretty solid numbers, like an ERA under 4, and has gotten a lot of big outs for the team. So I hear what you're saying. I think there's definitely some more consistency he can bring, but I've overall just been impressed with what he's been able to provide this team this season.
Tony Andracchia, MarquiseSports.com is my guest. We're talking Cubs here. Cubs and Diamondbacks game 2. 5:40 tonight is the score pregame show, and then 6:15 is first pitch on the Southwest Airlines Cubs radio network. So the start, yet another big start from Kyle Hendricks. I guess we over-dramatize this, but it seems like he seems to be the guy. We need you to be that guy. We need you to do it tonight. Are we placing undue emphasis on this because this is a team they're chasing in the wild card, and here come the Brewers? This seems like a big game.
I would agree it does, because you knew what the stakes were. Everybody knew what the stakes were coming into the All-Star break. They performed really, really well. You know, they had a great road trip. They, a week and a half, 2 weeks or whatever leading into the All-Star break, looked like a pretty good team. You sweep the Orioles, like, that's great, obviously. A good series against the Cardinals, splitting it even. Hendricks had that big performance on Friday against the Cardinals. They really needed that. They do need it again today, because I would agree, if, you know, you go out and lose this game, you lose the first two games in this first series overall out of the break to a team that you're chasing in the wild card, that's not good. That's not exactly what you want when the trade deadline is just, you know, a little bit, 10 days away or so at this point now. So I would agree. It's a big game. I think Hendricks, you know, was very impressive on Friday, especially after his previous outing on the previous Sunday. Was he had to come out early because of a back issue that kind of flared up, like back spasms. So to go the 7 innings that he did last Friday in St. Louis was strong, and then now he's on more than extra rest. I think he's certainly capable of it. And just overall, pretty much since April, he's looked like the Hendricks that we've come to know over the last 10, 11 years, and not like the guy that we saw the first 7 outings or so of the season.
Before I let you go, Tony Andracki, let's go back 9 years. It was August. Craig Counsell is in his first 4 months as Cub manager, you know, in the season. And Joe Maddon was too. And after the trade deadline and he got to a series against the Giants, it was a wild card team they were chasing. Joe Maddon sent messages to his team that this is serious. We're playing playoff baseball right now. He benched Starlin Castro and inserted Addison Russell as the starting shortstop, even though Castro was supposed to be the future just like Rizzo was. They were the pair. And then in the fourth inning of a game, the Cubs were down by a run or two. He was having none of Jason Hamill's nonsense, and he yanked him. And Jason Hamill's going, seriously? Are you kidding me? And Joe Maddon's, this is a playoff run. And they swept the Giants. They passed them in the wild card standings. They never gave it back, and they went to the postseason. You've watched Craig Counsell. I don't know what he's learned. I don't know what you've learned about him. Are there Maddon-like moves he could make, or what would you suggest he might do in sending that kind of message and playing it that seriously?
That's a really good question. I mean, I remember that series vividly from 9 years ago, and Maddon talked about it for years after, not just Maddon, but a lot of the players in the team about, you know, Rondon getting a few big saves in there and pitching out of jams. And that was the series where everybody basically realized the Cubs were for real. And I think this team, you know, the Orioles series could have been that. It hasn't quite played out that way. You know, they're 2-3 in games since. But, you know, I think what Counsell can do, I don't know the answer to that, really. I don't know that you can shake things up drastically. You know, you're not going to pull Dansby off shortstop and put Nico there, for example, like that. You know, the Starlin Castro, Addison Russell move, like that thing is not going to happen here. You're not going to drastically change the lineup. Adding Michael Busch in the two spot, which he did a few weeks ago, has proven to be a really good move for sure for this team. But yeah, I don't know that there's like a ace up his sleeve or anything that he can play and get this team to perform the way that they're capable of and probably should be performing. But I think what the Cubs wanted in him, what Jed wanted from Craig from the season, why they made the hire, is steadiness. And I think they hope that over the course of the contract and over the course of a long season, that being steady, not panicking, not having, you know, treating one series or one game bigger than others would end up being a net positive. So I think they're kind of going to rely on that. Counsell's not the guy that's going to scream at umpires and get tossed 10 times a year like Bobby Cox. Like, that's just not his style. So I think asking him to be something different, you know, be maybe a little bit more like Joe Maddon, isn't necessarily the path to success here. And I think the Cubs are going to kind of just ride it out and, you know, we'll see what the trade deadline holds, but I wouldn't expect Counsell to make any sort of like major Maddon-type moves over the next few weeks here.
All right. Well, we'll wait and see, and then we'll talk about it after it happens or doesn't happen. Tony,
sounds great.
Tony, thanks for your time. I appreciate you coming on today.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
Tony Andracki of MarqueeSports.com. Watch Marquee.com. You can catch his stuff. He's right on top of the Cubs beat. You heard it right here. All right, I'm going to take a break. When we come back, the Cultural Zeitgeist and the WB Club. But first, Cultural Zeitgeist, the weirdest music anniversary because of the weirdest music pairing you've ever heard. Certainly I've ever heard, and that means you've ever heard it, because that's it. That's the rule. I'm enforcing it. But we'll talk about that next. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
A three technique. It's something. It's a newer type of situation.
We have the Cultural Zeitgeist.
Right now, you're doing something for the culture.
Oh, baby. Do it for the culture.
For the culture.
Do it. Do it a little slower. Like.
I want you to tell all your friends about me.
What are you?
I'm Batman.
I know it was you, Fredo. You broke my heart. You broke my heart.
That's the anthem. Get your damn hands up. I do this for my culture.
Joe, warn the Chiefs.
Ohms. Ohms.
Ohms. Ohms.
I don't know.
I think we've really penetrated the cultural zeitgeist.
Indeed, the cultural zeitgeist here on Saturday Suckage. We're just talking Cubs with Tony Andracki. And I did want to mention this, your broadcasting note, speaking of the Cubs. On Tuesday afternoon, Parkins and Spiegel will be doing something they've never done before, broadcasting live on the field at Wrigley. Parkins and Spiegel will be doing their show from the field from 2 to 6, and we'll be joined by Nico Horner, Craig Counsell, and other special guests prior to Cubs versus Brewers. Tune in Tuesday starting at 2 right here on The Score and the free Odyssey app. Thank you for tuning in to Saturday Suckage and the cultural zeitgeist. So, Florida Panthers star Matthew Tkachuk was born in Phoenix because that's where Keith played, and raised in St. Louis because that's where Keith went. So this week, Matthew Tkachuk, the Florida Panthers star, in charge of the Stanley Cup because the Florida Panthers won the Stanley Cup, he took the Stanley Cup to the elementary school he attended in St. Louis. Stay in school, kids, even summer school. You mean to Omaha?
Smoke weed every day.
No, that's next. That's a Wake and Bake Club. Well, moving right along. Here's a tweet from the National Park Service, one of the best follows in all of social media. Quote, if you drink a lot of water, you won't have time for other people's drama because you'll be too busy looking for a bathroom. That's me. Welcome to my life. Drink a lot of water, no drama, looking for a bathroom.
Omaha! Omaha! Omaha!
That's it. Saturday Suckage rallies. All right, this is... I was not aware of this, but this would have to be the weirdest musical anniversary this week, the weirdest musical pairing you ever could have imagined. This was pointed out to me by Dan, Obi-Dan Kenobi, because of all he knows, but Big Dan at my Trader Joe's noted that this week, July 17th, in 1967, that's 57 years ago, when Jimi Hendrix dropped out of the opening act as the opening act on tour with opening for, wait for it, the Monkees.
Here we come, walking down the street. We get the funniest looks from everyone we meet. Hey, hey, we're the Monkees, and people say we monkey around. But we're too busy singing to put anybody down.
Imagine that. Parents tell your kids, Jimi Hendrix opened for the Monkees. It lasted 7 shows. History.com comes up with this piece regarding that. The booking of psychedelic rock god Jimi Hendrix with the made-for-television Monkees was the brainchild of Hendrix's manager, Mike Jeffrey, who is seeking greater public exposure for a young client who is a budding star in the UK, but nearly unknown in his native United States. It was in the UK, in fact, that Monkey Mike Nesmith, I think his mom invented whiteout. Mike Nesmith's mom, do I have that right? Invented liquid paper. Mike Nesmith first heard a tape of Hendrix playing while at a dinner party with John Lennon, Paul McCartney, and Eric Clapton. Let's review the bidding. A monkey is at a dinner party with two Beatles and Eric Clapton. This made-for-TV group. Nesmith and his fellow monkeys Peter Tork and Mickey Dolenz became instant Jimi Hendrix fans. And after witnessing his legendary performance at the Monterey Pop Festival in June 1967, they encouraged their own manager to invite the little-known but highly respected Jimi Hendrix to join their upcoming U.S. tour. It was officially known as the Jimi Hendrix Experience, but you're not going to experience it without Jimi Hendrix. Hendrix appears to have no input in the direct decision, though he made his opinion of the Monkees clear several months earlier in an interview with Melody Maker magazine. Quote, "Oh God, I hate them. Dishwasher, dishwater. You can't knock anybody for making it, but people like the Monkees?" He would become their opening act. Nevertheless, Hendrix joined the tour in progress in Jacksonville, Florida on July 8th. Predictably, says History.com, the reception given to the now legendary rock icon by the young fans of the Bubblegum Monkees was less than worshipful. As Mickey Dolan later recalled, quote, "Jimmy would amble out onto the stage, fire up the amps, and break out into Purple Haze," which you heard earlier, "and the kids in the audience would instantly drown him out with, 'We want Davey.'" God, it was embarrassing. Finishes Mickey Dolenz. Jimi Hendrix managed to get through a total of only 7 dates with the Monkees, culminating on his final show on July 17th, 1967, just as Big Dan said, which may or may not have ended with Hendrix saluting the crowd with his middle finger. There was no truth to the widely circulated rumor that he'd been kicked off the tour after protests by the Daughters of the American Revolution that his show was, quote, too erotic. Jimi Hendrix opening for the Monkees and closing the show. It lasted 7 shows, and that was that. I'd never heard of the pairing. Thank you, Daniel, for sharing that with me. What a thing. So speaking of music, I started this some months ago and it pissed off some people. So what better reason to keep it going than that, to keep it going? Time for, we're at the 21st greatest riff in rock history.
1, 2, 3. Turn it up.
Sweet Home Alabama, Lynyrd Skynyrd, 21st greatest riff in rock history. And if you don't have to agree with that, you're allowed to make your own list on your own Saturday Suckage show. But you can't use Saturday Suckage because we've copyrighted, trademarked, bookmarked, pockmarked the thing. 815 says Whiteout. Mike Nesmith's mom. Can you confirm that?
Yeah, I Googled it. You were right. Whiteout.
Whiteout, which is liquid paper. It's the same thing. A Monkees mom invented Whiteout.
You're just waiting to say that.
There's a story. Yeah, a story. And they were TV put together. Kids, this is what your parents should tell you. The Monkees were a bunch of actors, and they sort of faked the singing and whatever, auto-tune before auto-tune. And they made a lot of money, but not for themselves. They made a lot of money for the network and for Don Kirshner. Don Kirshner had the idea. He rounded them up. He made them the Monkees. He picked the guys. Here we are. You're the guy. Somehow the Monkees found out what they were worth, which was not like $600 a month or whatever they were getting paid for this monumental fad of the day, but a wealthy fad. So, I believe it was Mike Nesmith who held Don Kirshner out of the window in the Tower Records building in Hollywood and apparently made him an offer he can't refuse. And you're going to change the terms of the contract or I'm going to lose my grip. So, that got done. That was what happened. And let's see, the other texture is 229 texture. Oh, the burnt end sandwich at Big Ed's was outstanding. Yes, Everyone on Saturday Suckers knows I am the greatest burn ends influencer in the United States. And now Big Ed's has moved to a new, bigger place. More burn ends. Bigger burn ends. Burnter burn ends. So they're at a bigger place. And of course, the burn end sandwich would be spectacular. Because as Big Ed's in Waukegan, they moved to a bigger place just sort of down the street. And that's where you go. That's where you get them. And if you do that catering, you go there and you go, oh my God, this is incredible. And you do the catering is not just the menu you see when you can walk in and order, because there's fried chicken on the catering menu that you can't get on the regular menu. You need to taste Big Ed's fried chicken. So cater something and invite me and Sean to it, because it's not so much that we love a free meal. When you're in radio, it's all about free meals, right? It's what can you do for me? That's what radio is.
Yeah. I get so excited when I see pizza boxes in the hallway.
And right. And when you're in the media, it's not officially journalism unless it's catered.
Right.
So if you're going to cater by Big Ed's, me and Sean are available to go. And my Otter, she loves burn ends.
Oh, yeah.
Me and Otter go up there when we can. So you need to get to Big Ed's, but you got to do it early. I don't know if it's too late already. There are people who wait outside for them to open at 11. It's true. We went up there on a Saturday. Go on there on weekends because you get greens. They have greens.
Sure.
Oh, my God. That's one of the side dishes. But they run out of stuff. People are waiting in line for that.
I know you've described it as God's food.
It is God's food. It is. And Big Ed's is closer than God to me. Closer thy appetite to me. All right, so that's what I know in the cultural zeitgeist, and we tried to bring you what we could of the Joey Ice, my freezer guy at Trader Joe's. Joey Ice and my Trader Joe's. The monkeys most certainly did not fake their singing. Did I say the singing? All right. I meant the instruments. I don't know. It seemed like they were, I don't know if they could play. All right. They were a real group. They hired musicians. Is that what happened? Whatever. The monkeys were certainly, they made a lot of money. They made a lot of albums. They were not anybody's stepping stone. See what I did there?
I got that.
Yeah. Okay. Take a break. We will come back with the Wake and Bake Club. And we will come back with, of course, it's Snoop Dogg. Boy, the Olympics start next week. He's going to be an Olympic reporter. And I think one of his pieces of advice will be, don't use the Seine in Paris for bong water. Right? That would be good. That's what Snoop would do. There's something else Snoop did this week that needs our attention, and I'll help you, as Snoop will help you, connect the dots to something that seems so obvious. Stevie Sunshine. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Smoke weed every day.
It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
There's something important I was supposed to do today.
Dopest dope I've ever smoked. Hands down, dopest dope I've ever smoked.
Wake and Bake Club.
I love weed.
I smoke weed every second of every day.
Hey, I am your stoner.
Even Smokey the Bear is going, only you can. I knew this.
We're so high right now.
We're not low.
Open up the door, it's Dave.
Who?
Dave, D-A-V-E. Will you open up the door? Yeah, Dave.
Dave?
Right, man, Dave. Now, will you open up the door?
Dave's not here.
Oh. Hey. Smoke weed every day.
I had the flu one time. Did a gummy bear. I was like breakfast at Bernie's, you know, the dead guy.
Yeah.
I was supposed to go to a party, and I went to the party, and they sat me in a chair, and people got sat beside me, took pictures, and I'm sitting there like breakfast at Bernie's.
Smoke weed every day.
Ah, yes, remember that, Nate Dogg. We'll come back to that. Welcome in, welcome back, WB Club members. As I mentioned, the WB Club meeting, 773 texter talking about Snoop at the Olympics and the Sen. Snoop will ignite the Olympic torch with his spleef.
So you're well known for, you can rhyme anything, right?
So, speaking of his spleef, Snoop launched his first marijuana dispensary. And you're kind of wondering, what took so long? I mean, what? How much more perfect is it? He also launched a new line of cannabis products honoring Tupac. He opened the dispensary in California. And he did it with the launch of the retailer called Swed. Swed, you say? Yes, Swed. S-W, S period, W period, E period, D period. What does Swed mean? What does it stand for? Nate Dogg will tell you.
Smoke weed every day.
There it is. It's, well, smoke weed every day. Swed is the title of Snoop Dogg, is the name of Snoop Dogg's dispensary. There are various nods Snoop Dogg's career under the record label Death Row. There's a smoke-proof DJ booth where he can smoke and spin music. Snoop memorabilia all over the place. One of the other unique features, according to this report, Marijuana Moment, is a dispensary. In the dispensary's catered selections of marijuana offerings include a new line of limited edition products from Snoop's Death Row Records cannabis brand. The product line honors rapper Tupac Shakur, the iconic artist who was killed in 1977. It was Tupac who gifted Snoop his first blunt.
Phil, that's just the way my thing moves.
That's where it started. That was it. Tupac, son, I bequeath to you. Here's your first blunt.
Smoke weed every day.
Snoop's dad was at the grand opening of Swed. Swed, of course, stands for
smoke weed every day.
See how quickly you caught on, people? Snoop's dad said he's very proud to have a weed shop in Inglewood, in the area where Snoop grew up. Papa Snoop said, I can't believe it. I can get some free weed. What more do you need to know? Okay. That is Snoop. That is Snoop opening up a dispensary. Smoke weed every day is the initials S-W-E-D, his shop, his dispensary. It's called Squed in near Inglewood, off, I think it's on Sentinella, or just off Sentinella. And there has to be an In-N-Out Burger nearby. So that's a really good combination. That's
smoke weed every day.
Yep, there you go. And boy, this the monkeys discussion with Jimi Hendrix, boy, did that light up the text lines and my own personal text. As I mentioned the monkeys, I'm not your stepping stone, as I was doing my cute radio segue. And I got a text. Says, Paul Revere was stepping stone, sir. I got it from Bruce Levine. MLB Bruce was texting me. And it turns out he's right. Paul Revere and the Raiders did stepping stone a year before the monkeys had a hit with it. All of a sudden, he's Wolfman Bruce. He just knows all about the music business and the records. Other texters pointed out the idea that Stephen Stills, 847 texter, Stephen Stills auditioned for the Monkees, but because of his bad teeth, they chose Peter Tork. I have no idea if that's true. But I'm sure Joey Ice, who's a musical historian, and Big Dan will tell me whether that's true or not. Stephen Stills had bad teeth, and Peter Tork became a monkey. So wouldn't it have become Crosby, Tork, and Nash? Would they have just, like, swapped roles, right? Swap
Crosby,
careers?
Tork, and Nash.
All right. I need to leave. I told Bruce he was right. I told Bruce, you're right about something. You are finally right about something, Bruce. And I'm going to alert the media. And here I am doing it on Saturday Suckage. Take that for what it is, Bruce. Take that for what it means. I want to thank everybody who came on? Oh, Mike Mayock and Mark Grody and Tony Andracki of Marquee. Mike Mayock was great talking about Hard Knocks. They did it when he was with the Raiders. Sean Sears, look how you rallied. You really screwed up the roll call.
Came in hot.
When I'm done, be followed by Trista Crick. Energetic and smart, and you give her a listen. You hear? I'm going to check up on you. I will find out. She'll take you up to Cubs baseball pregame at 5:40 right here on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
It wouldn't have been possible if we weren't here to be told how much we suck. So, kudos to you guys for sucking as bad as we do.
Oh, yes. Wait a minute, Mr. Postman.
Wait.
Oh, yeah.
That's it.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to Shopify.com/Odyssey Podcast to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/Odyssey Podcast.
It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
0-2. Inside corner to call third strike. 1-2. Inside corner to call third strike. Outside corner, it's a call third
strike. There's been a number of those that have been called today that aren't strikes.
The cap's on. It's a call third strike. Lord.
There's been way too many of those today, and I know it's not an easy job umpiring. There's been a lot of guys with good arms, but you cannot reward the pitcher for making a pitch like that that's down in the zone.
I think there were some big calls in this game that were called incorrectly. Some ball strikes that were just missed.
Yes, the Cubs are running down a dream. Hey, how's that for a baseball segue? The last voice you heard was Craig Counsell, manager of the Cubs. Yeah, that's it. That's as plain spoken as you're going to get. That's Craig Counsell. And before that, about not rewarding pitchers with balls that far down in the zone, that was Joe Girardi on Marquee. Speaking of Marquee, our next guest. You can find him, you can read him on watchmarquee.com. Tony Andracki joins me on the guest hotline presented by Circus Sports Illinois. Tony, I thank you for joining me today as the Cubs get ready to play game two. I'm torn. I hate hearing all the crap about umpiring. And here's why. It's part of the game. And I do think that it sums up the Cubs season that the Cubs don't know that they're allowed to swing earlier in the count, score earlier in the game, and they're allowed to adjust to that kind of umpiring. Play the game that's right in front of you. And I think that there was a lot of yelling and screaming about the umpiring and the bet. Well, that's the way it is. How are you going to combat that to win the game? I'm very frustrated that they allowed themselves to stay frustrated. Do you think there's any merit to that?
Yes and no. I mean, I guess, you know, yes in the sense of like, yeah, you know, when the umpire is a big factor in the game, I think there's always something that you could have done differently, right? Like, as a team, the Cubs left 10 guys on base yesterday. That's not all umpiring, and I think they know that. They would say that as well. The no aspect is, you know, I think with after the 4 days off, I do think there's a big mental change, and like, yet while us on the outside watching and fans watching and stuff, it's like, oh, here we go again type of game yesterday. I don't know that the players and coaches and stuff internalize it that way. I don't think they're like, oh, here we go again, or the frustration mounts or whatever right away. I really do think that there's something to every team, you know, whether it's the Cubs or the White Sox or Diamondbacks or whoever, coming after the All-Star break, 4 days off, feeling refreshed and feeling optimistic and positive. And I don't think a couple bad calls take you out of that. You know, these guys are all big leaguers and get to that point. But yeah, that being said, I do think the calls changed the game. And I think the Cubs' inability to get the big hit was the real decider, not just the umpiring, but, you know, the fact that they scored two runs and had the opportunity to score plenty more.
Tony Andracchi of Marquee is my guest. You can watch Marquee.com. You can read his reports there. And I don't know if it's good or not. They're playing the Diamondbacks, and look what the Diamondbacks did. They took advantage of, you know, Seiya Suzuki can't field. The Diamondbacks beat the Cubs in games in series last September. The Cubs thought they should have won. We thought they should have won. They didn't. The Diamondbacks got in, and they got into the World Series. And the Diamondbacks are being held up as an example of just get in and see what happens. And then this year, in a way not unlike last year's Cubs when they sucked, and then all of a sudden they got really hot. Bellinger got really hot. The Houston Astros trailed by 10 games on June 19th. The 24 games that they now lead the AL West in is the third fewest by a team to erase a division deficit of 10 plus games. So there it is. There's a team doing it this year. There's a team doing it last year. And maybe that's an impetus to make a deal or not. And I don't know. Why don't you tell us what you think would be required for the Cubs to get Astros like hot, get Diamondbacks like hot?
I think that's the multi-million-dollar question that every single person in the Cubs organization is asking themselves. You know, so I trust me, if I had an answer, you know, I think I would be sharing it and stuff too. So I don't have an answer, but I do think there are different elements. And for me, what it boils down to is it's I'm not so worried about the trade deadline or so focused on it, because I do think the Cubs have the capabilities to play better than they have played. I think it's the guys on their team that need to go out there and perform like they're capable of. And we always hear the phrase, you know, the back of the baseball card. And there are several guys on the team that are not performing up to what the back of the baseball card is. And, you know, they have a bunch of guys coming back from injury soon. And you mentioned Bellinger, you know, in the next couple of weeks, he might be back from the finger injury. They still kind of need to see how it goes, but a bunch of bullpen arms are coming back soon. And Mike Talkman was just activated. So I think that there's an element of, you know, getting healthy can help, the break can help, but at the end of the day, like the guys that are, you know, have already done it, have proven it, have been reliable contributors over the course of their big league career, need to just go out and do it over the final 60-ish games or whatever there is remaining. And I think that if they do that, if they pitch that well and hit that well and field that well and all that, I think we'll be looking up and the Cubs will be in a playoff spot. If they don't, if it's more of the same, like the first 100 games, then, you know, we'll be talking about the same thing, but the Cubs being 1-5 or 6 or whatever games out of the final playoff spot.
If that's the case, then the first person we should blame is Dansby Swanson. You think?
I don't know. I mean, possibly, sure. Yeah, like offensively, he is well below his career numbers. So, yeah, I think there's certainly like validity to that. He's been really good defensively. He had, you know, maybe a little bit of like throwing issues early in the season, not much. But, you know, he's been phenomenal defensively the last couple of months, really, and the team as a whole the last few weeks have been really good defensively. And that was something that I would point to, maybe not necessarily just one person, but I thought this team would be a lot cleaner defensively for the first couple months of the season than they were. And then also base running wise, I mean, they I don't know if they still lead in Major League Baseball and outs on the base pass and outs at home plate, but they did lead for much of the season. And I think those two areas, you know, you got to clean it up when the offense isn't performing the way they're capable of, and the bullpen has suffered a lot of injuries and suffered inconsistency as well. So to me, I think it's just that aspect, and it's a veteran-laden lineup too. You know, a bunch of guys playing the positions that they typically have played. I mean, Morel hasn't played a bunch of third, but he came up as a third baseman. That's the position he's played vast majority of his career in the minor leagues. And, you know, I was underwhelmed, I guess, by the defense and the base running early in the year. And I feel like that has kind of come back to haunt them and part of why they're in the position they're in.
Tony Andracki is my guest, MarqueeSportsNetwork.com. He covers the Cubs. So you mentioned some of the injuries, and especially the bullpen, which, look, I'm sorry, even, you know, unless you have Mariano Rivera, it's a crapshoot every year. So you talked about Merriweather, there's Ben Brown, there's Luke Little. You wrote about it. So share with the class what you wrote about and what hope might be brought to the Cubs bullpen.
Yeah, so Merriweather's getting really close. He just had his fourth rehab outing last night for Triple A Iowa. Looked pretty good, you know, threw like 27 pitches, got five outs. He's at the point where council said at the latest it would be on the road trip, starts next Friday in Kansas City. But he could be activated earlier than that, you know, if all continues to go well. I don't know if the Cubs will need another rehab outing from him at this point. So, I mean, I wouldn't be stunned if tomorrow or Monday he is activated and rejoins the bullpen. Again, they may be a little bit more cautious given that he missed 3+ months and didn't face hitters for almost that entire time as well. But I think that'll be huge. Ben Brown's still kind of throwing and not really facing like a ton of hitters. The timeline on him is murky. They don't really know. Luke Little, they're getting a second opinion on his left shoulder, so they don't really know exactly how long he's going to be out. I think anytime you are a pitcher and you only throw four pitches and have to come out, you know, like hanging your arm the way he did,
yeah,
certainly a bad sign in the middle of July. So I don't know what that means overall, but yeah, he's not going to be back for a while, I guess we'll say. Then Adbert Alzolay looks like he's, you know, on the verge. I don't know. They haven't released like for sure next steps, but he's been throwing bullpens, I know, in Arizona too. So he's another guy that maybe could be on his way back within the next few weeks here. But I think all those things would be really big for the bullpen, just continuing to get healthy, and some of the other guys that they've found, you know, the Tyson Millers and stuff of the world, I think would – this bullpen actually has been a strength over the past month. It's been one of the better bullpens in baseball. You add some of these guys into it, like, it could be like a legit strength for this team over the final 60 games.
I wonder – It seems to be ever-changing, but the circle of trust, Craig Counsell's circle of trust in the bullpen, who's that handful? Where does he go? He's in trouble. Help, Cecil, help. I'm coming, Beanie Boy. Who comes for him? Who's the circle of trust?
You know, I think it's a few guys right now. Tyson Miller is one that has certainly emerged. You know, Hector Neris has had his ups and downs, but I think his veteran experience, Council really appreciates, the Cubs really appreciate as well. Mark Leiter Jr. coming back after the forearm injury, you know, he's been solid. And then Porter Hodge, the rookie, has definitely been in there. Like I think it was the second game Saturday, whichever game on the doubleheader in St. Louis, he was the one that was out there in the eighth inning, and he did end up, you know, blowing the lead in the game, but he was the one that was in the circle of trust and got the call. So I think those four righties are the main guys. But we've also seen Drew Smyly and Hayden Wesneski pitch in some big innings and high leverage moments throughout this season as well. So I think if they're both going good, and Wesneski looked pretty good yesterday, I think that they could potentially be in that circle of trust as well.
He just scares me, Hayden Wesneski. I like the whole story. I like the threat. I like the way it looks. And then, oh my God, I mean, just some of those games, the palm to forehead games, or just the oh no's. And I don't know what it is. Maybe he thinks it's one thing or two things. Maybe the Cubs believe they can solve it. It keeps going out there, but he scares me.
I mean, I think what it is really is the home run, and that's what has victimized them this year, is he's given up too many home runs. And there's a stretch where it was like, I think 6 or 7 out of 11 appearances not too long ago that he had given up a home run in. And that's just tough to do when you're a reliever and you're only pitching one inning or maybe a little bit more than that at times. But Yeah, I think that was the big deal. I think the fortunate part was most of those were solo homers. You know, John Lester always says, like, solo homers won't kill you as a starting pitcher. They certainly can as a reliever, yeah. But, you know, figuring that out is a big factor. But all that said, I mean, Wesneski still has pretty solid numbers, like an ERA under four, and has gotten a lot of big outs for the team. So I hear what you're saying. I think there's definitely some more consistency he can bring, but I've overall just been impressed with what he's been able to provide this team this season.
Tony Andracchi of MarqueeSports.com is my guest. We're talking Cubs here. Cubs and Diamondbacks game two. 5:40 tonight is the score pregame show, and then 6:15 is first pitch on the Southwest Airlines Cubs radio network. So the start, yet another big start from Kyle Hendricks. I guess we over-dramatize this, but it seems like he seems to be the guy. We need you to be that guy. We need you to do it tonight. Are we placing undue emphasis on this because this is a team they're chasing in the wild card, and here come the Brewers? This seems like a big game.
I would agree it does, because you knew what the stakes were. Everybody knew what the stakes were coming into the All-Star break. They performed really, really well. You know, they had a great road trip. They, for a week and a half, two weeks or whatever leading into the All-Star break, looked like a pretty good team. You sweep the Orioles, like that's great, obviously. A good series against the Cardinals, splitting it even. Hendricks had that big performance on Friday against the Cardinals. They really needed that. They do need it again today, because I would agree, if you know, you go out and lose this game, you lose the first two games in this first series overall out of the break to a team that you're chasing in the wild card, that's not good. That's not exactly what you want when the trade deadline is just, you know, a little bit, 10 days away or so at this point now. So I would agree. It's a big game. I think Hendricks, you know, was very impressive on Friday, especially after his previous outing and the previous Sunday. Was he had to come out early because of a back issue that kind of flared up, like back spasms. So to go to the seven innings that he did last Friday in St. Louis was strong, and then now he's on more than extra rest. I think he's certainly capable of it. And just overall, pretty much since April, he's looked like the Hendricks that we've come to know over the last 10, 11 years, and not like the guy that we saw the first seven outings or so of the season.
Before I let you go, Tony Andracchi, let's go back 9 years. It was August, and Craig Counsell is in his first 4 months as Cub manager, you know, in the season, and Joe Maddon was too. And after the trade deadline, and he got to a series against the Giants, it was a wild card team they were chasing. Joe Maddon sent messages to his team that this is serious. We're playing playoff baseball right now. He benched Starlin Castro and inserted Addison Russell as a starting shortstop, even though Castro was supposed to be the future, just like Rizzo was. They were the pair. And then in the fourth inning of a game, the Cubs were down by a run or two. He was having none of Jason Hamill's nonsense, and he yanked him. And Jason Hamill's going, seriously? Are you kidding me? And Joe Maddon's, this is a playoff run. And they swept the Giants. They passed them in the wild card standings. They never gave it back, and they went to the postseason. You've watched Craig Counsell. I don't know what he's learned. I don't know what you've learned about him. Are there Maddon-like moves he could make, or what would you suggest he might do in sending that kind of message and playing it that seriously?
That's a really good question. I mean, I remember that series vividly from 9 years ago, and Maddon talked about it for years after, kind of, or not just Maddon, but a lot of the players in the team, about, you know, Rondon getting a few big saves in there and pitching out of jams. And that was the series where everybody basically realized the Cubs were for real. And I think this team, you know, the Orioles series could have been that. It hasn't quite played out that way. You know, they're 2-3 in games since. But, you know, I think what Counsell can do, I don't know the answer to that, really. I don't know that you can shake things up drastically. You know, you're not going to pull Dansby off shortstop and put Nico there, for example, like that. You know, the Starlin Castro, Addison Russell move, like that thing is not going to happen here. You're not going to drastically change the lineup. Adding Michael Busch in the two spot, which he did a few weeks ago, has proven to be a really good move for sure for this team. But yeah, I don't know that there's like a ace up his sleeve or anything that he can play and get this team to perform the way that they're capable of and probably should be performing. But I think what the Cubs wanted in him, what Jed wanted from from Craig from this season, why they made the hire, is steadiness. And I think they hope that over the course of the contract and over the course of a long season, that being steady, not panicking, not having, you know, treating one series or one game bigger than others would end up being a net positive. So I think they're just going to, they're kind of going to rely on that. Council's not the guy that's going to scream at umpires and get tossed 10 times a year like Bobby Cox. Like, that's just not his style. So I think asking him to be something different, you know, be maybe a little bit more like Joe Maddon, isn't necessarily the path to success here. And I think the Cubs are going to kind of just ride it out. And you know, we'll see what the trade deadline holds. But I wouldn't expect Council to make any sort of like major Maddon type moves over the next few weeks here.
All right. Well, we'll wait and see. And then we'll talk about it after it happens or doesn't happen. Tony.
Sounds great.
Tony, thanks for your time. I appreciate you coming on today.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
Tony Andracki of MarqueeSports.com. Watch Marquee.com. You can catch his stuff. He's right on top of the Cubs beat. You heard it right here. All right, I'm going to take a break. When we come back, the Cultural Zeitgeist and the WB Club. But first, Cultural Zeitgeist, the weirdest music anniversary because of the weirdest music pairing you've ever heard. Certainly I've ever heard. And that means you've ever heard it, because that's it. That's the rule. I'm enforcing it. But we'll talk about that next. Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score.
A three technique. It's something. It's a newer type of situation.
We have the Cultural Zeitgeist.
Right now you're doing something for the culture.
Oh, baby.
Do it for the culture.
For the culture.
Yeah. Do it. Do it a little slower. Like.
I want you to tell all your friends about me.
What are you?
I'm Batman.
I know it was you, Fredo. You broke my heart. You broke my heart.
That's the anthem. Get your damn hands up. I do this for my culture.
Joe, who owned the Chiefs?
Owns.
Owns.
I don't know.
I think we've really penetrated the cultural zeitgeist.
Indeed, the cultural zeitgeist here on Saturday Suckage. We're just talking Cubs with Tony Andracki. And I did want to mention this, your broadcasting note, speaking of the Cubs. On Tuesday afternoon, Parkins and Spiegel will be doing something they've never done before, broadcasting live on the field at Wrigley. Parkins and Spiegel will be doing their show from the field from 2 to 6, and we'll be joined by Nico Horner, Craig Council, and other special guests prior to Cubs versus Brewers. Tune in Tuesday starting at 2 right here on The Score and the free Odyssey app. Thank you for tuning in to Saturday Suckage and the Cultural Zeitgeist. So, Florida Panther star Matthew Tkachuk was born in Phoenix, because that's where Keith played, and raised in St. Louis, because that's where Keith went. So this week, Matthew Tkachuk, the Florida Panthers star, in charge of the Stanley Cup, because the Florida Panthers won the Stanley Cup, he took the Stanley Cup to the elementary school he attended in St. Louis. Stay in school, kids, even summer school. Me to Omaha.
Smoke weed every day.
No, that's next. That's a Wake and Bake Club. Well, moving right along. Here's a tweet from the National Park Service, one of the best follows in all of social media. Quote, if you drink a lot of water, you won't have time for other people's drama because you'll be too busy looking for a bathroom. That's me. Welcome to my life. Drink a lot of water. No drama. Looking for a bathroom.
Omaha! Omaha! Omaha!
That's it. Saturday Suckage rallies. All right. This is, I was not aware of this, but this would have to be the weirdest musical anniversary this week. The weirdest musical pairing you ever could have imagined. This was pointed out to me by Dan Obi-Dan Kenobi because of all he knows, but Big Dan at my Trader Joe's noted that this week, July 17th, in 1967, that's 57 years ago, when Jimi Hendrix... dropped out of the opening act as the opening act on tour with opening for, wait for it, the Monkees.
Here we come, walking down the street. We get the funniest looks from everyone we meet. Hey, hey, we're the Monkees, and people say we monkey around. We're too busy singing to put anybody down.
Imagine that. Parents tell your kids, Jimi Hendrix opened for the Monkees. It lasted seven shows. History.com comes up with this piece regarding that. The booking of psychedelic rock god Jimi Hendrix with the made-for-television Monkees was the brainchild of Hendrix's manager, Mike Jeffrey, who is seeking greater public exposure for a young client who is a budding star in the UK, but nearly unknown in his native United States. It was in the UK, in fact, that Monkey Mike Nesmith, I think his mom invented whiteout. Mike Nesmith's mom, do I have that right? Invented liquid paper. Mike Nesmith first heard a tape of Hendrix playing while at a dinner party with John Lennon, Paul McCartney, and Eric Clapton. Let's review the bidding. A monkey is at a dinner party with two Beatles and Eric Clapton. This made-for-TV group. Nesmith and his fellow monkeys Peter Tork and Mickey Dolenz became instant Jimi Hendrix fans. And after witnessing his legendary performance at the Monterey Pop Festival in June 1967, they encouraged their own manager to invite the little-known but highly respected Jimi Hendrix to join their upcoming U.S. tour. It was officially known as the Jimi Hendrix Experience, but you're not going to experience it without Jimi Hendrix. Hendrix appears to have no input in the direct decision, though he made his opinion of the Monkees clear several months earlier in an interview with Melody Maker magazine. Quote, "Oh God, I hate them. Dishwater. You can't knock anybody for making it, but people like the Monkees?" He would become their opening act. Nevertheless, Hendrix joined the tour in progress in Jacksonville, Florida on July 8th. Predictably, says History.com, the reception given to the now legendary rock icon by the young fans of the Bubblegum Monkees was less than worshipful. As Mickey Dolenz later recalled, quote, "Jimmy would amble out onto the stage, fire up the amps, and break out into Purple Haze," which you heard earlier, "and the kids in the audience would instantly drown him out with, 'We want Davey.'" God, it was embarrassing. Finishes Mickey Dolenz. Jimi Hendrix managed to get through a total of only seven dates with the Monkees, culminating on his final show on July 17th, 1967, just as Big Dan said, which may or may not have ended with Hendrix saluting the crowd with his middle finger. There was no truth to the widely circulated rumor that he'd been kicked off the tour after protests by the Daughters of the American Revolution that his show was, quote, too erotic. Jimi Hendrix opening for the Monkees and closing the show. It lasted seven shows, and that was that. I'd never heard of the pairing. Thank you, Daniel, for sharing that with me. What a thing. So speaking of music, I started this some months ago and it pissed off some people. So what better reason to keep it going than that, to keep it going? Time for, we're at the 21st greatest riff in rock history.
One, two, three.
Turn it up.
Sweet Home Alabama, Lynyrd Skynyrd, 21st greatest riff in rock history. And if you don't have to agree with that, you're allowed to make your own list on your own Saturday Suckage show. But you can't use Saturday Suckage because we've copyrighted, trademarked, bookmarked, pockmarked the thing. 815 says Whiteout. Mike Nesmith's mom. Can you confirm that?
Yeah, I Googled it. You were right. Whiteout.
Whiteout, which is liquid paper. It's the same thing. A monkey's mom invented Whiteout.
You're just waiting to say that.
There's a story. Yeah, a story. And they were TV put together. Kids, this is what your parents should tell you. The monkeys were a bunch of actors, and they sort of faked the singing and whatever, the auto-tune before auto-tune. And they made a lot of money, but not for themselves. They made a lot of money for the network and for Don Kirshner. Don Kirshner had the idea. He rounded them up. He made them the monkeys. He picked the guys. Here we are. You're the guy. Somehow the monkeys found out what they were worth, which was not like $600 a month or whatever they were getting paid for this monumental fad of the day, but a wealthy fad. So, I believe it was Mike Nesmith who held Don Kirshner out of the window in the Tower Records building in Hollywood and apparently made him an offer he can't refuse. And you're going to change the terms of the contract or I'm going to lose my grip. So, that changed. That got done. That was what happened. And let's see, the other texture is 229 texture. Oh, the burnt end sandwich at Big Ed's was outstanding. Yes, as everyone on Saturday Suckage knows, I am the greatest burnt ends influencer in the United States. And now Big Ed's has moved to a new, bigger place. More burnt ends. Bigger burnt ends. Burnter burnt ends. So they're at a bigger place. And of course, the burnt end sandwich would be spectacular because there's Big Ed's in Waukegan. They moved to a bigger place just sort of down the street. And that's where you go. That's where you get them. And if you do that catering, you go there and you go, oh, my God, this is incredible. And you do the catering is not just the menu you see when you can walk in and order because there's fried chicken on the catering menu that you can't get on the regular menu. You need to taste Big Ed's fried chicken. So cater something and invite me and Sean to it because it's not so much that we love a free meal. When you're in radio, it's all about free meals, right? It's what can you do for me? That's what radio is.
Yeah. I get so excited when I see pizza boxes in the hallway.
And right. And when you're in the media, it's not officially journalism unless it's catered.
Right.
So if you're going to cater by Big Ed's, me and Sean are available to go. And my Otter, she loves burnt ends.
Oh, yeah.
Me and Otter go up there when we can. So you need to get to Big Ed's, but you got to do it early. I don't know if it's too late already. There are people who wait outside for them to open at 11. It's true. We went up there on a Saturday. Go on there on weekends because you get greens. They have greens.
Sure.
Oh, my God. That's one of the side dishes. But they run out of stuff. People are waiting in line for that.
I know you've described it as God's food.
It is God's food. It is. And Big Ed's is closer thy God to me. Closer thy appetite to me. All right. So that's what I know in the cultural zeitgeist. And we tried to bring you what we could of the, Joey Ice, my freezer guy at Trader Joe, Joey Ice at my Trader Joe's. The Monkees most certainly did not fake their singing. I didn't say the, did I say the singing? All right. I meant the instruments. I don't know. It seemed like they were, I don't know if they could play. All right. They were a real group. They hired musicians. Is that what happened? Whatever. The Monkees were certainly, they made a lot of money. They made a lot of albums. They were not anybody's stepping stone. See what I did there?
I caught that.
Yeah. Okay. Take a break. We will come back with the Wake and Bake Club. And we will come back with, of course, it's Snoop Dogg. Boy, the Olympics start next week. He's going to be an Olympic reporter. And I think his one of his pieces of advice will be, don't use the Seine in Paris for bong water. Right? That would be good. That's what Snoop would do. There's something else Snoop did this week that needs our attention, and I'll help you, as Snoop will help you, connect the dots to something that seems so obvious. Stevie Sunshine, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Smoke weed every day.
It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
There's something important I was supposed to do today.
Dopest dope I've ever smoked. Hands down, dopest dope I've ever smoked.
Wake and Bake Club.
I love weed. I smoke weed every second of every day.
Hey, I am your stoner.
Even Smokey the Bear is going, only you can. I knew this.
We're so high right now.
We're not low.
Open up the door. It's Dave.
Who?
Dave. D-A-V-E. Will you open up the door? Yeah, Dave.
Dave?
Right, man. Dave. Now, will you open up the door?
Dave's not here.
Oh.
Hey, 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 hey. Smoke weed every day.
I had the flu one time. Did a gummy bear. I was like... breakfast at Bernie's, you know, the dead guy.
Yeah.
I was supposed to go to a party, and I went to the party, and they sat me in a chair, and people got sat beside me, took pictures, and I'm sitting there like, breakfast at Bernie's.
Smoke weed every day.
Ah, yes, remember that, Nate Dogg. We'll come back to that. Welcome in, welcome back, WB Club members. As I mentioned, the WB Club meeting... 773 texter talking about Snoop at the Olympics and the Sen. Snoop will ignite the Olympic torch with his spleef.
So you're well known for, you can rhyme anything, right?
So, speaking of his spleef, Snoop launched his first marijuana dispensary. And you're kind of wondering, what took so long? I mean, what? How much more perfect is it? He also launched a new line of cannabis products honoring Tupac. He opened the dispensary in California. And he did it with the launch of the retailer called Swed. Swed, you say? Yes, Swed. S-W, S period, W period, E period, D period. What does SWED mean? What does it stand for? Nate Dogg will tell you.
Smoke weed every day.
There it is. It's well, smoke weed every day. SWED is the title of Snoop Dogg, is the name of Snoop Dogg's dispensary. There are various nods Snoop Dogg's career under the record label Death Row. There's a smoke-proof DJ booth where you can smoke and spin music. Snoop memorabilia all over the place. One of the other unique features, according to this report, Marijuana Moment, is a dispensary. In the dispensary is catered selections of marijuana offerings, including a new line of limited edition products from Snoop's Death Row Records cannabis brand. The product line honors rapper Tupac Shakur, the iconic artist who was killed in 1977. It was Tupac who gifted Snoop his first blunt.
Phil, that's just the way my thing moves.
That's where it started. That was it. Tupac, son, I bequeath to you. Here is your first blunt.
Smoke weed every day.
Snoop's dad was at the grand opening of SWED. SWED, of course, stands for...
Smoke weed every day.
See how quickly you caught on, people? Snoop's dad said he's very proud to have a weed shop in Inglewood, in the area where Snoop grew up. Papa Snoop said, I can't believe it. I can get some free weed. What more do you need to know? Okay. That is Snoop. That is Snoop opening up a dispensary. Smoke weed every day is the initials SWED, his shop, his dispensary. It's called SWED in near Inglewood. I think it's on Sentinella or just off Sentinella. And there has to be an In-N-Out Burger nearby. So that's a really good combination.
Smoke weed every day.
Yep. There you go. And boy, the monkeys discussion with Jimi Hendrix, boy, did that light up the text lines and my own personal text as I mentioned the monkeys, I'm not your stepping stone as I was doing my cute radio segue. And I got a text as Paul Revere was stepping stone, sir. I got it from Bruce Levine. MLB Bruce was texting me. And it turns out he's right. Paul Revere and the Raiders did Stepping Stone a year before the Monkees had a hit with it. All of a sudden, he's Wolfman Bruce. He just knows all about the music business and the records. Other texters pointed out the idea that Stephen Stills, 847 texter, Stephen Stills auditioned for the Monkees. But because of his bad teeth, they chose Peter Tork. I have no idea if that's true. But I'm sure Joey Ice, who's a musical historian, and Big Dan will tell me whether that's true or not. Stephen Stills had bad teeth, and Peter Tork became a monkey. So wouldn't it have become Crosby, Tork, and Nash? Would they have just, like, swapped? Roles, right? Swap careers? Alright. I need to leave. I told Bruce he was right. I told Bruce, you're right about something. You are finally right about something, Bruce. And I'm going to alert the media. And here I am doing it on Saturday Suckage. Take that for what it is, Bruce. Take that for what it means. I want to thank everybody who came on. Oh, Mike Mayock and Mark Grody and Tony Andracki of Marquee. Mike Mayock was great talking about Hard Knocks. They did it when he was with the Raiders. Sean Sears, look how you rallied. You really screwed up the roll call.
Came in hot.
When I'm done, be followed by Trista Crick. Energetic and smart, and you give her a listen. You hear? I'm going to check up on you. I will find out. She'll take you up to Cubs baseball pregame at 5:40 right here on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
It wouldn't have been possible if we weren't here to be told how much we suck. So, kudos to you guys for sucking as bad as we do.
Oh, yes. Wait a minute, Mr. Postman.
Wait.
Oh, yeah.
That's it.